Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. A lot of things can happen at the state legislature when we look at public health and human services. So there's a lot of issues to parse through. Some of those issues have focused over the last few years on child protective services in Montana. Been some merited criticism, I believe, of that agency. So they've come under an examination at the state capitol as well. But there's some little things and some bigger things that members of the Public Health, Welfare, and Safety Committee in the Senate are dealing with. And I'm going to have a good conversation today about that as we have our bi-monthly or bi-weekly, however you want to refer to it, majority. Well, the Dems like to call their session the Dem Power Hour. I call this one the majority agenda, but Cody made a joke this morning. It's the majority more power hour. And so that's where we're going with this one today. Dennis Lenz, Senator Dennis Lenz is with us. And then Senate President Matt Regeer will join us a bit later on today on Voices of Montana. State Senator Dennis Lenz joins us, a veteran of, did I put it down here? Yeah, five legislative services, sessions, I should say. That goes back to 2013. And retired, he's listed as a retired family farmer, but also served a number of years as captain in the Billings Fire Department, too. And now Senate District 25, Billings Central to West End. Doing a lot of work as we talk about, well, I hit it on child protective services, but there's a lot more. We've been looking at health policy, of course, the Medicaid Reauthorization Act. We'll probably come to our agenda here. There's a couple of bills that Senator Lenz had carried earlier this week that I think are very interesting, too, and we'll get into that as we say. Hello, Senator. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. Glad to be here. And I agree. I'm happy it's Friday, too.
I know it. You guys, I think you had your first weekend session last weekend, right? I mean, you guys pretty much are 6 days a week, and then there's no catching up in that one day, is there? It's just... It's a load, right?
It is a load. When those bills start coming and you have to just keep pushing them through and visiting with the drafter and amending as needing, you can't dawdle it. You just can't dawdle at all.
Yeah, and you guys don't. I mean, that's what I like about it. Even though there may be some, you know, superfluous sorts of things going on. I like how you, both bodies, they really try to keep, because there's just too many bills to roll through to, you know, to get caught up in those sorts of things. Let's go into an overview from your standpoint, Senator, on what the Public Health, Welfare, and Safety Committee is dealing with, what you're trying to accomplish in this session.
Well, so several things are before us. We will be visiting about Medicaid. That's going to be renewed this time and what form that looks like. So there's many, many bills out there concerning that. This is the first time when we've had multiple discussions on what we'd like that to look like. And so I think that was important. For me personally, I expend a lot of energy in child protective services reform. I've been working on that since 2017. And so multiple things, we've kind of reached the point where people are willing to change. Sometimes it's taken quite a while to change. And so that's been helpful. How we deal with our nursing homes, how we deal with the behavioral health people and the state hospital and alternate arrangements, for them, just many things, and all involving people and all highly charged with emotion.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that veteran experience, I think, pays off an awful lot in this sort of atmosphere because, well, number one, when you look at Child Protective Services, and they have come under, I think in my mind, I said it, legitimate criticism over the past several years. Montana has been, well, I don't know, it's, I shouldn't say this. I mean, I don't know who labeled it, but the child removal capital of America, that doesn't sit very well. But the rate of child removal in Montana is tremendously high, I think, compared to the rest of the nation. It's 16.8 children per 1,000. and maybe two or three times higher than the national average. What's on the plate to address that, Senator?
So, several things, and it's taken a while. So when we were working under the previous administration, it moved very slow, and the social workers maybe weren't held to a higher standard. I'm grateful for the work they do, and I do want to increase that professionalism. And one of the themes that I see through this is consistency in how we're doing that. So the Department of Justice has been open to redoing their Child and Family Ombudsman Office. It is currently, you know, you're open, you can complain to them about how CPS cases are going, but they didn't have a lot of teeth. They couldn't testify in court. They were limited. They would send out some very good reports about, I think, changes that were happening within CPS, but it needed to have more teeth. The Department of Justice is very open to expanding that department and making it more worthwhile. We're looking at maybe adding on to Citizens Review Committee. That has fallen on and was never very functional, but it would provide an opportunity for a citizens board to assess are these CPS cases operating as well as they could, particularly after the initial, when it's determined by the court what you need to do, do you need to go to drug treatment, do you need to get a job, whatever you need to do to get your children back. And so that's one of the things that we're kind of processing on that. We've kind of built on, a few years ago, we moved forward a five-day initial hearing. So that was big, because prior to that, the first hearing when you had your children removed was what was called the show cause hearing, and that was 20 days out. And if it was any kind of deferred, I've heard as long as, you know, 3-4 months for your first hearing. So we have made some major steps. Yellowstone County kind of led the way in that with pilot projects on that to establish a five-day hearing that now is utilized across the state. And so that you're going to come in. Now the courts have kind of bought in more to a consistency within pre-hearing conferences. So you would come and visit with your social worker, your lawyer, the prosecutor, before you even go into the judge. You may have full agreement on the direction you want to go, and then you come in, your five-day hearing, and now the show cause hearing at 20 days is being used more as a status-type hearing of are we on the right track. So that has been major. And last time we also put in counsel for children within CPS cases. We didn't used to assign counsel for younger children. Now we are, and looking to maybe strengthen that.
And Senator, you know, what's your impression? Again, you talked about how getting those families back together, you know, repairing the health of those families, and noted, you know, that's very emotional and very heady. What are some of those? Well, maybe just educate us too. Why can or how does the state remove a child from parental control?
Well, first case, in the sense that there are some cases that are that bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I understand that, because we don't want to just dismiss that. But I think sometimes the inconsistency in how the system works, maybe inconsistencies across social workers or expectations, maybe a little bit of covering your behind. You know, you're going to remove the child because you don't want him to die. But then we have sometimes and historically given children back into situations that were dangerous for them. So that is the inconsistent word has been the one I keep bringing up. Now, the department has been much more open to this and much more resistant, less resistant to change. Mm-hmm. So we're turning the corner, but as you noted in your figures, it's a slow move. And one of the drivers is, our Indian reservations in the state and the Indian Child Welfare Act that governs much of how that is done. And that's hugely complex. And that does add another layer to this, but just for the way our state looks.
Yeah, and that is noted here, too, in some of the documents that I've looked at, the disproportionate representation or overrepresentation of Native American children there. Let's peel into that a little bit, because we understand that there's cultural differences that play a part of that, and also, sort of in an international type of setting with our reservations. You know, talk about how you try to step or walk through improving on those criticisms.
Yeah. So last session, I moved forward the bill that ended up having kind of a working title of ICWA for All, Indian Child Welfare Act. But many of the concepts of are you in your culture, are you in your same schools, are you closer to relatives, that ICWA calls for, I felt like, and still feel like, could apply to all children. So why are we not doing that for all the children? Now, that being said, there are unique things on the reservations, both in governance, in culture. There are increased drivers in off the reservation as far as substance abuse and difficulties in the families, and that's sad. The whole thing makes me sad. Mm-hmm. I've said to my wife before, legislators are able to look at cases if the parents allow them access, and they always make me sad because this is hugely difficult. I've wondered this time if maybe we need to create a task force. I hadn't been going down that line. I've just created a task force specifically on Indian child welfare, how we interact with the state. This is mostly governed at the federal level. ICWA is a federal law. But what could we say around the fringes and how we work with the governments and such to provide, once again, another kind of consistency in how we deal with these cases, because they're just so complex. It's hard to even describe what it looks like.
Senate President Matt Regeer will join us a bit later on, and there's a lot of things to talk about from his perspective as well. With us here, though, GOP Majority Agenda, or I kind of like it, Cody, the More Power Hour. It is Dennis Lenz. He's Senator, Senate District 25, Billings Central to West End. A lot of public service as a retired captain of the Billings Fire Department. He might also consider his work as a family farmer as a public service, too. And right now chairs the Public Health, Welfare, and Safety Committee, and also Senate Majority Whip. And, Senator, thanks again for being here. I appreciate this. This is a fair discussion. I think we need to keep talking about it here. So I'll go to Skip in Hamilton on KLYQ. And Skip, good to have you alongside. Some questions about Medicaid reauthorization for our good senator.
And thank you, Tom. I hope everybody has a pleasant weekend. Just so you know, we're going to get a toast of winter up here, a taste of winter over in the Bitterroot this weekend.
Bring it on.
We're not supposed to go. We're supposed to have the dome up, so we don't get that. So I wanted to address, and by the way, Senator Lenz, I appreciate your passion about some of these subjects. You're not afraid to deep dive into some of this stuff, and that's why you're on the committees you're on. And, sir, I wanted to ask you about the two different bills. One is House Bill, I think, 230, and the other is 245, which addresses Medicaid expansion, and they're both similar, except one is wants to eliminate the work requirement, which is what I thought really brought everything together. And I think it was 2017. This is such an important issue. And I don't know if you can just give us some cliff notes on it, because it's important for people to really learn. some of the things that are important in this bill, including the finality of what happens every year with Medicaid expansion, I think delivering back to the state of Montana something like $27 to $30 million a year from the taxes collected from working people as the derivative of this Medicaid expansion. Please explain if I'm incorrect, but would you give us some cliff notes so people understand how to address their senators and their representatives as to whether this should pass or not?
Thank you, Skip. I appreciate that. And, yes. And Senator, that cliff note book is probably just as big as the bill itself, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's, I don't think I've ever seen this many Medicaid-associated bills this time. Bill numbers aren't on top of my head, but I think I know what we're talking about. They want to primarily the minority party, want to take it back to you don't have to, or not even consider it, work requirements, co-pays, and such as that. So basically just socialized medicine. Mm-hmm. And remember, this is on the expansion population. So if you're disabled, or if you're poor and have a family, a kid, pregnant women, you all end on traditional Medicaid, which is sitting right now, it varies, but I think it's in about 62% from the feds, and we make up the balance. Medicaid expansion is primarily young, working age with no disabilities or anything, up to 138% of poverty. And so that is odd that we would move Medicaid expansion or even consider it to not have work requirements or volunteer requirements or anything like that. We all know if something's worth anything, you kind of got to pay for it somewhat. And in this arena, it pays for being a productive member of society. But so the dynamic with the primary, I would call the primary bill being carried by Buttrey and supported by many, including the governor, is my understanding, does insert some work requirements and such in there. Now it's going to need to be approved by the Trump administration and probably would happen. So that is a positive. But I've said on Medicaid that I question as to whether this is for the people or the hospitals, because a lot of money starts moving around here, and I am questioning, do we, by expanding this, create more health in people by being on it? And I ask that question regularly. As part of the expansion, the hospitals get what's known as a HUF payment, hospital utilization fee. So you get a bed tax. You go to the hospital, they tax your bed. That money goes to the state. They match it with Medicaid funds coming from the feds, and it goes back to the hospitals. So that makes up the gap on Medicaid doesn't pay for 100%. Medicaid expansion pays 90%. But still, my question is, does it actually provide health? And that money for the hospitals, I'm starting to think that there needs to be more expectations on that. Do we have expectations on perhaps behavioral health beds or something that adjoins what the work of the hospital does? If we're giving that money, that is part of how we're doing it. I think that would be very much a community benefit to maybe look at that.
How do I got a couple of things. Maybe I should move on from that. I'm just curious if you got a quick answer on all those different proposals. Do you want to combine them into one, or are there a couple that can stand alone and still be effective in that regard? And I know that takes some time, and there's many committee meetings that will handle that.
Yeah, so I think it's a legitimate thing to look at something like two things. What if that is called the FMAP, Federal Medicaid percentage. I can't remember what the A is. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, so I mentioned the 62%, the 90%. What if that changes? Mm-hmm. You know, if that goes down, it's going to impact the state pretty significantly. And so we need to honestly take a look at what should we do? What is the safe way of going about this? And I think the reality is, we need to kind of limit that population for that reason. You know, I mean, I don't have any grief on classic, what I call classic Medicaid. Those people need the help. Mm-hmm. But why do we constantly keep pushing that level on the expansion? We need to look at it.
Yeah, and that's part of the philosophical discussion that belongs in this avenue, or in this area, I should say. Senator Dennis Lenz is with us. He is a Senate Majority Whip as well as Chair of the Public Health, Welfare, and Safety Committee in the Senate. And I only got like 2.5 minutes, and I didn't leave enough time, but let's get a couple of things out there, because I know we're looking at enhancing some of our daycare ability in the state of Montana, and also that healthcare community workforce. And you guys have got a couple of things that rolling through the legislature.
Yeah, I'll touch on it quickly. So the Children and Families Interim Committee objected to the executive's 95-page daycare rules. Very expansive, very much leaning towards bigger daycares and then requiring family daycares to kind of comply. The committee objected, which would take us through the end of the legislature. Well, we have to have a response. So we've been digging through, coming up with a legislative response. In reality, these 95 pages shouldn't have come in rule. They should have come to the legislature, and let's have this discussion. But as part of that, okay, we're modifying them to make them better, make them what the legislature is going to say is okay, but we have another bill. That the first one's for, well, we don't have a bill number on it, but second one's LC 465 that puts in law family daycare parameters. We did a few years ago that if you were a Department of Defense daycare, that we would give you a license in the state. Well, ironically, even though Department of Defense is federal, their rules are so easy to operate in. You know, there are no specific parameters on mulch under your swing sets. It just says you need to have sufficient area for the children to play. Mm. So that, for family daycares, is really significant, because I think everybody, if they could, would love to be in a small daycare. I'll touch on the second thing you mentioned. The Physicians Workforce Act is attempting, and we have the blessing of having medical schools in this state now, but we're constantly dealing with a lack of physicians that want to come here.
Thank you so much. It's Senator Dennis Lenz. Dennis, thanks, and thanks for your public service, sir.
Thank you.
Great conversation regarding some of those things across the plate of the Public Health, Welfare, Safety Committee. And there's a ton of them there with State Senator Dennis Lenz. And now joined by Senate President Matt Regeer, Senate District 5, Southwest Kalispell and Lakeside, and veteran of 4 previous sessions, including the hot seat in the House last year and leadership this year as Senate President. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Good morning, Montana.
Thank you for being on the program today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been talking about, because you've had to talk about it and deal with the Senate Ethics Committee and their investigation on some misproprieties probably by or allegedly by Senator Ellsworth, the last session Senate president. And thank you for updating and just getting that information out there, like, you know, just as straight as you can to the public and the press there. Update us, sir.
Yeah, it's actually, we had went through the Fraud, Waste, and Abuse Hotline when we learned about this contract, and they did their investigation and came up and substantiated the facts that it was an unlawful contract. So it's not alleged anymore. It is substantiated. Mm-hmm. And so we took that information from that report, that memo, from the audit, fraud, waste, and abuse department there. And that's what really prompted. It was 49 votes on the Senate floor to take this to an ethics committee, and Senator Ellsworth will have a chance to explain.
And that was to happen on Wednesday. And I know that they're you're setting the stage for that to be as above board and as they would say, you know, unbiased. Why don't you talk about those precautions? And I don't know that I have been witness to a Senate Ethics Committee in the state of Montana in my wee number of years. But, you know, talk about how you walk through this, Matt.
Yeah, it's and we're really going on. Montana Constitution has a sentence in there that any chamber can expel or punish a member for good cause. And that's exactly what we thought the Ethics Committee, well, the whole Senate did, 49 of us, thought the Ethics Committee was the proper place to go for a hearing. It is kind of new ground that we're plowing here on just the logistics, I guess, of how it plays out. But give the truth. All the truth, really. Like I said, we already have an audit report that that substantiated those findings. So, give Senator Ellsworth the chance to explain why.
And we had talked about it here on the program in the past with you as well, and I've been reporting on it too. There was a contract signed with an associate of Senator Ellsworth, then Senate President, but this was in December as his term was expiring and that money was available. He split that contract up into two so that he could avoid, again, that's what the Senate Ethics Committee will peer into, and a legislative audit report had substantiated that, as you had said, split that into two to avoid triggering the public procurement process and oversight. So that's the gist of it there. How do you then, and you know, I talked with Senator Tom McGillivray a couple of weeks ago on this too, because it's been in front of the Senate for a while here. But if anybody will go on and look at committee hearings and go look at those sessions that start normally at 1 o'clock a day, they'll see at 1 o'clock every day, I should say, they'll see that business is being conducted there. Talk about, Matt, how you put those kinds of things aside in the legislature so you can get to the whatever it is. You know, there's 4,000, I think, introduced, but you're only going to you'll be able to handle 1,700 or 1,800. That's still a lot.
Yeah, we've got a lot of legislation going. And listen, that's what the people sent us here to do. Is everybody made a lot of campaign promises of how we want to make Montana better. And run it through the legislative process here. That's what we're sent to do. But I believe part of our job, too, here is to keep that integrity of government, the public trust. The people put their trust in us to come and operate state government and their benefit. It's Article 2 of our Constitution that says all political power is vested in and derived from the people. And I love that. It is the people of Montana. It's your capital. It's your House, it's your Senate, it's your executive branch. And right now, you know, because of one senator, that public trust has a black eye. And so that's part of our job, too, not just getting legislation done, but making sure that things are transparent, ethical, and any corruption here is rooted out.
Was there any move by the Senate Ethics Committee? Are those parameters set for this investigation?
Yeah, they did. They did have one committee committee on Wednesday, I believe it was. And they set the parameters for this kind of rules, how they'd operate, and just kind of set that sandbox. And we're working on getting all the information together. I believe they're going to have another meeting here on Monday to set out I think even subpoenas they're looking at and that kind of notices given to everybody. And hopefully in a week or two here, we can have the hearing and have things figured out, yeah, and get it to the floor to see what the Senate would like to do with the facts.
Yeah, it is one of those side track kinds of things and ancillary. But, you know, as a member of leader, well, as the leader of the Senate president, it is vitally important to walk through that. I appreciate that. And also as the Senate leader, we are with Matt Regeer, Senate District 5 out of Kalispell. Some of these other major items, I want to get your opinion on how you feel property taxes is tracking right now, changes, reform, adjustments. How do you think that's tracking right now in the bodies?
There's a few different proposals. Democrats have one to kind of change the rates. which I understand some things inflate faster than the others. So I do understand some of that angle, maybe not to the degree that they have it proposed. But that's one angle, just to make it a little more uniform based on the inflation rate. You know, commercial hasn't inflated as fast as residential. So kind of offsetting that to make it a little more equitable. So everybody feels the pain, the same kind of concept. So that's one that the Democrats have going. I know the governor's got one starting there in the House that puts a lot on second homes, which I understand. I get that. I'm not going to stand up for Justin Timberlake, and he needs to pay his fair share. A lot of people come into Montana and use us as a playground, and sure, I'd pay more in the property tax there. But the part that I have trouble with on that bill is it really catches a lot of Montanans with second homes, and it could even price out a lot of Montanans from owning that second home that maybe grandma and grandpa gave down that cabin in the woods that now they wouldn't be able to afford because their property taxes are going to skyrocket with that kind of concept. So that's it. It's got some question marks of how it's going to play out on that one. I know Senator Glimm over here has a bill that's just taking the tourist tax, quote unquote, the bed tax and a rental car tax paid for by a lot of tourists, and just giving that back to just primary resident Montanans as just a credit on their tax bill. So helping them out that way, it wouldn't affect local governments at all or any of the second homes Montana's own. So I kind of preference to that concept. But yeah, like I said, there's about three different concepts moving through, and I imagine maybe even a little bit of each three will make it to the finish line.
Welcome back here. Senator Matt Regeer is with us, Montana Senate President, Senate District 5 out of Southwest Kalispell and Lakeside, a veteran of four previous sessions, and as I noted, Speaker of the House in the 68th and now President of the Senate in the 69th. And Senator, thank you for your public service. I appreciate that. I know that it comes with certain weights. You know, there's certain burdens with it, too, but you handle it, in my mind, pretty professionally. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom. I do love this, that we're just citizen legislators.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just a construction guy that gets to come down here and make laws that I abide by, too. So.
Well, and, you know, we talked about it at one point, but your father was in the legislature, your sister's in the legislature. This kind of thing kind of runs through your blood a little bit, so... there's experience in that, right?
it does. But once again, Dad is just a retired teacher of 28 years. My sister's a nurse. I'm a construction guy. It's just citizen legislature. So that's what I love about Montana.
May it always be so. Spending. Government is not a for-profit organization. What's the budget look like?
Yeah, so our budget, and this is a great thing to be in, we're all talking tax relief. We've got an estimated $522 million to the positive that we're taking in. So we are taking in too much money to run state government. Like you said, we're not a business. A surplus is good if you're out and competing in the private sector, but we take the money that we should only be taking the money that we need to operate state government. And it's your money, Montanans, and the services that we provide as a state government, we should only take that much money to operate. So that's a lot of money, over $500 million that we need to cut taxes. And so the question this session is where? And that's a great argument, I think, to have. The second floor, the governor has his ideas, and a lot of them good. The House has theirs, the Senate has ours, and we'll go back and forth on how we can keep more money in Montana's pockets and where and how we're going to do that.
I'm pretty much fiscally conservative and have railed about our spending and how reckless it can be. That can happen at the state level, but it's more notably at the federal level. With a budget like this and with a surplus, there's temptation. There's, even for myself, if I were to put myself in your shoes or whatever, there's temptation to spend that on certain services that people really believe that are necessary and should come from the government. How do you, what are the parameters for that discussion? How does the rest of the body walk through or avoid that kind of temptation?
Yeah, that is a great point. And there's people across the board, all the way conservative to liberal, all the way in between of people going, well, no, I want less spending, but not here. This is, this program's good. And this one. So it's, you do kind of get that, ownership, if we will say, from legislators and the executive branch too. That is a great question of, it takes a lot of backbone, and that's a federal level to have a DOGE and Elon Musk come in and say, hey, where can we start cleaning house? And honestly, Tom, I think that is one thing that we're missing here in Montana. We've, I think, been very good stewards, at least in the past decade, of keeping the budget within our means. But the huge efficiencies that 16 years of Democrat governors, I know there's more efficiencies to be found, and it does take backbone to get in there and dig it out and find that. So yeah, Hopefully that's something we can accomplish in the future.
Yeah, and hopefully the Montana public can help provide some of that backbone as well, I mean, in weighing in on these things. What else is on the plate? I got like 2 minutes, Senator, and so what do people need to know right now where we're at in the Senate?
We've got educational freedom rally today at noon. If you're in Helena or close here, come on by. We got free pizza and going to talk about how we can make education system the best for kids as well as the parents controlling that. And we got a great bill over there, House Bill 320. It's going to be heard this afternoon. Lee Deming out of Laurel is carrying that. It can be a game changer, I think, for parents and kids in Montana education. We've got... the income tax relief, like we talked about, property tax, like we talked about. We got private property rights. This is something that really hasn't been in the news much. Senator Beard has Senate Bill 146 that limits government restrictions on private property. You need to have a compelling interest if you're a government to tell somebody you can't do something with their land. It's a great bill. Senator Hertz has another property property freedom bill on Senate Bill 214 that you got to be in favor. If you go to litigation, you got to be in favor of free property use. That's the wording in the bill. So some great private property rights things, I think, keep government from encroaching on that. So that's something that really hasn't been talked about too much that like to hit. Judicial reform, we're cruising through on that too. Example of that. Do I have time for another?
You've got, like 35 seconds.
35 seconds. Like right now, judges, when they recuse themselves, they get to pick their replacement. And as we know, judges have Benson bias. That should be a random choice. You don't get to pick your own replacement on something you have a conflict of interest in. So, I mean, it's straightforward judicial reform that needs to be done.
Yeah.
And we're doing that, too.
And actually, there's a number of straightforward judicial bills out there that I like. I mean, people may think it's all complicated, but there was some things that needed to be adjusted that are not all that complicated, I think. And so I like how those are being addressed. Yeah. Hey, in 10 seconds, you feel like we're on pace? Legislative Day 21?
Yeah, I think we started off a little slow, but we are hitting our groove now, and bills are going through and getting the work done on every front, as well as dealing with ethics, all the way to dealing with all our campaign promises.
Thank you for your service, and I know it's a long haul. So, Matt, appreciate you. All right, good luck.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Have a great day, Montana.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.